tomorrow is going to be windy with rain at times, drier and bright later. BBC London 94.9, it's 3:05.
I can't let it pass. Briar and Dright. I wish I could. I'd love to have just gone straight into it. Briar and Dright, that's a terrific
name. That firm of solicitors.
Yeah, Briar and Dright, that's exactly it. And I think you must be carrying on with Briar by the sound of it. That certainly sounds important.
You're listening to London's radio station.
Danny Baker on BBC London 94.9. Weekday afternoons from 3.
Preposterous.
I may be wrong, but I think you're wonderful. I may be wrong, but I think you're swell. I like your style, see, I think it's marvelous. I'm always wrong, so how can I tell? All of my shirts are unsightly, all of my ties are a crime. If during you I pick rightly, it's the very first time you came along, say, I think you're wonderful.
I may be wrong, but I think you're grand.
Good afternoon, everyone. We've kind of given away the surprise now, but look, Amy's back and all of that.
Hello.
And there she is, splashing away in the deep. It's the spirit of Esther Williams incarnate, because I think, apart from anything else, just get on your little webcams there and have a look at Amy LeMay. You can't see me, but you'll see Amy. And don't adjust the contrast, don't adjust the colour, don't adjust the hue. There was a time when television had a hue switch. Because she really is that colour, and that's extraordinary at the height of October. Because, Amy, because...
Well, I've been diving in Grenada.
Tell us exactly what
Dan,
do you mean by that?
I've been learning to dive. Yeah, I'm writing an article for the Times about learning how to dive. Yes,
That seems like the most extraordinary article, and what a wonderful gig.
Yeah, well, they really had to twist my arm, as you can imagine. Actually, it's really quite hard to pass the exam and everything. You got a lot of homework.
Yeah,
I had a lot of
exam.
I'm studying for 4 days by the pool, but I was studying and doing skills and, like, you know, 5 dives in the pool, four dives in open water.
At all. I'm a pretty good swimmer. I'm pretty good at jumping in and throwing shapes, but I've never been able to dive.
I am now a qualified open water scuba diver by PADI.
Well, that's something, man.
So,
it is something.
And
no.
Dan, you know, when you go down there, it's another world.
Yeah.
I've seen things
under
that, like, would
sea.
Just blow your mind.
Under the sea.
Yeah.
Darling,
I saw a starfish. I saw a baby stingray.
Oh, man, they're dangerously known.
Huge coral. Sea snake. Sea millipedes.
Oh, what's a sea millipede? Is that exactly what I think it is. How thick is a sea millipede?
It's like that thick around.
It's like a stick of rock.
Yeah, it's like a stick of rock.
What color?
Segmented with bristles coming out everywhere.
I like sea millipedes. I bet they're tasty as well.
Yeah.
But you dab it a week in Grenada. That's where you've been.
It was really great. Really great. Well, I brought you back a little present down, because you know Grenada is the spice island.
Is it? I didn't know that.
It is, yeah. They make nutmeg and...
Got a Hessian bag here, the Grenada. Oh, it smells like Bermondsey.
No, it doesn't.
It does. Bermondsey
doesn't smell like nutmeg.
Oh, yes, it does. You go around Fair Thames. Because where do you think all these spices came in for, like, 150 years?
Uh-huh.
And now they're all fancy apartments. But when the weather's right and the wind is right, the bricks still are steeped in nutmeg. That smells like nutmeg.
Dump it out. There's loads
this
of stuff in there.
I like this. It's like walking from the Lilliput Hall round to the Royal Oak. Oh, man, yeah. That is beautiful.
There's loads
of stuff in there. Well, I'm loath to take it out because that's gorgeous. I've got to tell you, that's the most evocative smell to me. That's me at 17.
Well, that's what Grenada smells like.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well done, Grenada. Oh, that's lovely, the old bay leaf here. I'm just... What's it? To be rutting. I'm rutting, everyone. Good afternoon. That is something, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. It's absolutely beautiful.
Well, I also brought you a copy of the National Examiner and the National Inquirer.
Okay, so I can sit this with this nose bag on while I'm looking at all that sort of stuff. Amy LeMay is back with us, and that's a terrific thing, and looking like $1 million. Happy birthday, Jenny, I understand, by the way. So we'll round off what we've been doing this week. We'll bring Amy up to date on what's happening over on the island and all of that, which only really kind of wound up again yesterday.
No, I can't believe that you finished doing the island just as I've come back from an island, because, you know, I know I spoke to you on the phone.
And you will finish it.
Yeah, okay. Now, when I was out in Grenada, and I know you've been very insistent about having this island somewhere in Scotland.
It's going to be, we've got it down to three now.
And listen, I know I spoke to you just when I went out to Grenada, and I said I was scouting around, and the Grenada Tourist Board and the people of Grenada have said that they will give us an island.
It's too far.
No, listen, there's this amazing island, and it used to be a Norwegian whaling station, like in the 20s.
Mm. And that's in his favor.
And they just abandoned.
What, in Grenada?
Yeah.
Norwegian?
It was an island full of Norwegians killing all the whales. They killed almost all of them.
Uh-huh.
And then they left. They were only there for like 4 years and they left in like 1921.
Well, there's bad vibes already. There's bad karma about that island. We'll wake up in the middle of the night and hear... the ghosts of many whales. I've seen the fog. They'll come back and get us.
But it's totally uninhabited. Right. And I've had a look at all the people that are on the island, list of listeners that you've been...
Yeah. Those are the only 50 going to be allowed on with their dependents.
Well, we'd all be able to fit. That's a thing. We'd all be able to fit. And there's already a boat there. I checked it out.
We're down to two. We found in... We've been doing our own thing. We found two in the Hebrides. And there's one, which has got to be honest, is off the coast of Iceland. But Iceland's beautiful.
It's
the Iceland
cold.
Gals are here. Iceland. No, it's not cold. No, Greenland's cold. Iceland. Anyway.
What is Mike and Islington, our gay farmer, going to grow?
You've been away. Balin's been sitting in. There's been some moments I haven't been as vigilant as I've been.
Is this like Balin's personal Brokeback Mountain?
We'll take a wild guess. What do you think? So hang on. We'll be right back, everyone, with a proper show. Hang on.
As I pulled away slowly.
at the very beginning. Tom Waits, of course, the very first track, side one of the first LP he ever made, and all 55. Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to continue from yesterday. To be the last day of this. What have you got that used to belong to somebody else? And it's not all about having Richard Burton's wig. It's more about, like yesterday, we found somebody who had a poster that once belonged to a murderer. They'll come. Oh, yeah, I know. It's pretty rank. It was good. What did you used to have? What did you used to have? And now you think, what was the matter with me? What happened to that? What did you used to have?
And what, things that you wish you still had?
Yeah, of course, yeah. And we've had a couple of three things where people are saying, can't bear to say it, but when I was about 16, I had. What did you used to have? What have you got that belonged to someone else? And the third part of this isosceles is, has someone of note taken something of yours? We've had lots of people who, gave autograph books and pens to people and they walked off with them. Or just people just generally didn't, you know. It started with poor old Danny Kelly. I'll tell the story to Amy, she wasn't here. Danny Kelly, when he was like 12, getting Tottenham's autographs.
Yeah.
Outside the ground, and they were all on the coach ready to go somewhere. But Terry Venables let down and said, do you want me to sign that, son? And he handed his autograph book in the coach and Terry signed it. And he said, shall I pass it around? Ooh. So all the Tottenham players started to sign it. And Danny's standing there while all the players are getting on and even the manager's signing it. And Danny's thinking, they're filling up my book. All the Tottenham players, just everyone's signing it. And while it was going on up and down the coach, all of a sudden he heard, hello? No, hang on. No, wait a minute, excuse me. You got my book? You got my book? Excuse me. It's my autograph. Excuse me. It's Danny. Excuse me. And Tottenham left town with his autograph book and he never saw it again. Aww. So has anyone of note ever, you know, for one reason or another, it doesn't have to be stolen, but you know someone of note has got something of yours. What's there, Amy LeMay?
Well, a couple of emails coming through. Margaret.Rutherford@bbc.co.uk is the address. Uh-huh. And Annie, who's a teacher in Croydon, says, okay, Candyman, what do I do now? You've taken my hairdresser off to your island.
Oh.
If that wasn't enough, I rang up for the book with the right answer. Was this like a giveaway you did yesterday?
The best children's book I've ever read, certainly in recent years.
It says, I had the right answer. I didn't get that either. I'm not bitter, but it's not turning out to be the best of weeks.
No.
I mean, will Sharon be able to get back to sort out my hair?
Could I
be your island supply teacher and pop over every 6 weeks or so and do some educating and get her hair
done? The whole beauty of the island, no one else is allowed on it. Even our most dedicated listeners who didn't make it onto her, I'm afraid. You will be able to pick up, if you get a big enough antenna, you'll be able to pick up our broadcasts on the island, but they are strictly for the 50 listeners and their inhabitants who are coming with us to the island. When we quit here, what have you got?
Well, this is from Natalie, and she says, hi, welcome back, Amy. She says, I am so jealous you went on a work gig to Grenada. She says she's a diving instructor, has had over 1,000 dives, never been to Grenada. Well, you're missing out because it's such a beautiful place.
What was the actual pertinency of Grenada?
What?
Why? Because
they have beautiful coral reefs there, and they have a ship that sunk, the Bianca C, which is like the Titanic of the Caribbean. No, it's 120 feet down. I can only go 40 feet down.
Can you?
Yeah, that's my limit.
Feel like going 40? Oh, that's something else we're doing, by the way.
What?
If you'd have gone 42 feet down when no one was looking and giggled to yourself, we're doing people taking liberties.
Do you know what? You can get drunk underwater.
Oh, I know. I'm all about
it. You can get nitrogen narcosis.
Oh, I thought you meant literally. You can take bottles down with you and suck them. And I've done that. What's that?
Nitrogen narcosis.
The bends?
No, that's not the bends. That's if you come up too quickly.
Yeah.
But nitrogen narcosis is when you're down for too long and you've gone too far down and you start acting really, really drunk underwater, like really foolish, really crazy.
Well, come on, everyone. We might as well do this. Your diving stories, please. I know we've been under the sea before, but your diving stories, please. If you've ever had nitrogen narcosis, tell us what a rush it is, man. It's a great rush. It's a tremendous high. What?
Natalie says, maybe I could be employed as your personal diving instructor on the island. What do you reckon?
No, the island's closed. The island's finished.
Surely we can have room for Natalie.
You know how this works. It's done. The island is done. There's no one.
But how cool if we're on an island and then everybody on the island will learn how to dive.
You've been away too long. You're getting soft. This is how it works. You know that.
I am one of 50 on our little island, and I pledge allegiance to my island home. We don't have an army or navy or air force, 'cause everyone else just leaves us all alone. makers and builders and bobbies on bicycles. People with talents to do everything. One thing we love about our little island is no one is royal,
but everyone's king. Now, that reminds you, it's an exclusive zone. No more talk about the island until the need-to-know basis is brought home to you. Here's a... This yesterday, we were asking the very last person on the island. Sorry, Anne. The very last person on the island was a ghost. That was a ghost. We wanted a ghost there.
Oh, yeah, John... Okay.
We did the sums wrong, and there seemed to be one more place. So I said, if someone's got a ghost, that'll be good on the island. It was a nine-minute call. This fella did 9 minutes on what's happened to him. Yeah, in his house and his nan and all of that. And we think we gave it to him. Just too late was Arthur, who says... Back in 1984, we rented a first-floor unit which formed part of the Victorian school conversion for small businesses. This was in Cambridge Row, Woolwich. I had to work late one evening, manufacturing PVC banners for Davis Cup Tennis, if you must know. I was working in what would have been part of the old school hall when the double doors at the far end slowly opened. Standing in the doorway was an elderly man wearing a brown warehouse coat and a flat cap, and he was leaning on a broom. I was really surprised, as I was under the impression I was the only one working in the four-story building. I called out, "Can I help you?" I'd not seen him before. He just stared at me. "Say, can I help you? We're manufacturing flags here." Nothing. I walked to the end of the room, which was a distance of about 30 feet, and I went through the doors into the corridor, which led to a disused fire escape and some toilets. The fire escape was locked on my side with a chain and a padlock, and the toilets were absolutely empty. There was no man, no coat, no hat, no broom. The only way out of that corridor was through the double doors that I'd just come through. I asked the landlord the next morning, and he said, "Oh, yeah, I've seen him." We've already got our ghost on the island, but now we have a reserve.
So is the ghost taking up the...
50th place. He can bring the person who delivered the ghost off and his dependents, though. Why?
Right, because Dan...
You're not going to try and winkle somebody
else
off.
No, but listen. Listen to this. A ghost isn't a person. A ghost is a spirit. A ghost does not take up any room.
You've been away. We couldn't do it anymore. On Tuesday, we needed... on Monday, we needed three more. Tuesday, we needed two more. Wednesday, we needed one more. That one more was still there on Thursday. Then we gave it away, and then in came Jim, said, "That's still only 49. I thought, oh, we can't now say to people, "Oh, and one more." So we gave it away to the ghost and his dependents. The person who called in with the story is the last on our island.
Yeah, but ghosts don't take up any room,
No, but the person,
Dan.
His dependents are the people who gave us the story. They're in. You can't chuck them out or there'll be 51.
What, is it the ghost?
Who is it?
Or the person?
Who is she? Who do you want on? Who is it?
No, I'm just wondering. I quite like a diving instructor, to be honest.
It's not good. You know, you're all over the diving now. You know what it's all about. But it is done. It's 50 and we're finished. And next week, you're going to find out some of the fun and games in store just for us, we islanders. It's going to be tremendous. You've got to finish your map anyway.
Yeah.
So what we need from you, what have you got that used to belong to someone? Who's got something that, of yours? Who's got something of yours? I'll tell you what, even if they're not famous, you can ring up and say, if Darren over in Beckenham's listening, you can ask for things back. What did you used to have? That's the other thing. Plus, ever taken a liberty? Terrific story yesterday. I know somebody who worked in the place where they did a lot of the... They worked for the... Hartnell. You know Hartnell?
Oh, what? The designers?
Queen, made all the Queen stuff. A fellow rang in and said... A woman rang out. Yeah, she used to work at that place, me and my friend. And when the Hartnells used to go out on a big do or out and we were still working, we were left to lock up. But we'd go right up the top where they kept all the measurements and look at all the royal family's personal measurements. That's taking a liberty. Oh. Somebody else jumped over the red rope in, I think it was Napoleon's house, and sat on his bed. Ever taken a liberty? A delicious one. 0207-224-2000, and we'll be right back. Amy Lemay's here. Everything's terrific.
Remember,
Look at that, the Jersey Earls. Yeah, the Jersey Earls, remember when. Good afternoon, everyone. One of the stories or things I forgot to put on the agenda then would have been our diving stories, because Amy LeMay's back, and now she's entirely different from when she last left us. She is a fully qualified diving not instructor.
I'm an open water diver.
Qualified diving. And so Jim, you know, walks in, Snudge, producer Snudge walks in and says, oh, yeah, so I said, let's have some diving stories. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our first diving story comes courtesy of Jim. Jim, what's the story? What's the story of diving? What do you want to tell us?
Well, it's diving in the Dead Sea.
Okay.
Now, as you know,
which is difficult in salt water.
Yeah.
And as a little kid, I must have been about 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I kind of tried to dive headfirst into the Dead Sea.
Now, I always picture the Dead Sea as just being a salt flat. It's a real sea.
No, it's real sea. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But
you
float on it because the constancy of salt is so heavy there.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know physics.
Yeah.
But I tried to dive. I dived in.
Uh-huh.
And as a little kid, suddenly I jumped out again once, you know.
Yeah.
But I had massive kind of like, in the backside. Yeah, so my dad...
You had a pain in the backside from diving in the Red Sea. Because you take some on board.
Yeah.
Okay, those of us who've been on flumes know this.
My dad
yes.
had to dig... because if you dig in the shore, beside the Dead Sea, you actually get clean water, like fresh water.
Okay, yeah.
You had to dig there, and I had to, like, sit there.
Oh!
It's like a cartoon.
Exactly, when they burn their backside and... Wow! And they run with the alarm bell going till they find a barrel of water and go... See, there's a perfect diving story. I'm sorry he jumped ahead of the queue, but if you got your own, 0207-224-2000, and, okay, so we'll be right back if I do that.
On 94.9 FM, BBC London.
So yesterday, Amy, you're bringing up to speed, in the phone-in we're still doing, what did you used to have, or what have you got that belonged to somebody else?
Yeah.
This is how it mutated into exactly the kind of calls we want. Somebody has a flake of paint... From, what was the painting? Van Gogh's Sunflowers.
No.
They leant across the rail, and it was behind, you know, there's a sheet of protective glass, but there's about 2 inches between the glass and the actual painting. It's just bulletproof, but you can see straight through it. As they leant across, they noticed just this flake came loose and floated to the ground. And he looked around, and he was on his own in there, and he thought, but it was literally at his feet. It fell and settled in front of his feet, and he looked down, behold. And there was a tiny flake of paint.
Oh, my
So he
goodness.
Licked his index finger, so I hope it doesn't melt on it, and picked it off the floor, and then put his hand in his pocket and walked home, and now he's got it in a matchbox.
That is amazing.
That is extraordinary. What do you got there?
This is from Blackie, the Earl of Mortlake, and it's about things you used to have. He said, my old next-door neighbor, Bob, used to have a carrier bag full of money. Okay. He said, this is totally true, this story. He said, walking home from the pub one day, my old next-door neighbor found a carrier bag stuffed full of money on the roof of a car. He took the bag home.
On the roof of a car?
Yeah. Didn't tell his elderly partner about it, as she was extremely law-abiding, and squirreled the cash away in various hiding places around the house, most of it being crammed under the carpets, on the stairs, and in the hallway. He never even counted it. There must have been a heck of a lot of money there. He happened to show the bag to my dad, and he said, oh, it sure was a sight to see and feel. So one day, soon after, however, his partner was cleaning the house, noticed some paper poking out from under the carpet. She discovered the whole cash, took the whole lot down to the police station, claiming she found it in the street. Can you believe that? Can you imagine a carrier bag full of money?
Even if it was old pound notes,
you'd be all right.
One of the ones we had yesterday, and let me just break this down for you. It can be any of these. Something you used to have, something you got that used to belong to someone else who's got something you used to have, and also something you could have had. Yesterday, a fellow was at the, when he was a kid, at the Tower of London, and the jewel room, and he says, I know it's too good to be true, sounds like something out of a film. He said the jewel room, the door was open, of course people were filing in and out, but he was only about 9, and he was the only one at that kind of eye level who noticed the key was still in the jewel room door that opened up or whatever, and it was in there. And he kept looking at it as they were side by side and thought, what if I took that and even just made an impression in soap, because that's what he'd seen in films. And he could have had the key to the door of the room holding the crown jewels.
Oh, man.
Just sort of very quickly before we move on to Andy and Martin. Andy and Martin, wait right there. This is from Paul in Queen's Park. I've got something that belongs to someone else. I have the index finger from the wax figure of the Child Dauphin, son of Louis XVI, from Madame Tussauds. I was in there, and it must have fallen off the figure just a few moments before. It was just on the floor. There, behold, was the index finger of the child Dauphin. I meant to hand it in, but I forgot. This was in the mid-80s. The French royal family were of some of the original figures made by Tussaud herself.
Oh, wow.
Still got it. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
We're not revealing anything about our Sophie now.
It doesn't mistake here, I mean, it for a
that,
candle.
In case they come and tell us. Exactly one night. You could actually scratch yourself or indeed pick your nose or teeth with the index finger from the Dauphin.
Damn.
No, I'm not saying it all in one movement. I'm saying, you know, separate them. Couldn't wash it, though. It'd bubble up. Here's Andy in Malden. Andy!
Yeah, hello. Good
thanks
morning.
For hanging on, Dick. Andy, you've taken liberties. What's the liberty you have taken?
Well, about 8 or so years ago, I was part of the crew that helped do up Michael Flatley's place up in North London.
Oh, very good.
And yeah. I'm always one of the tail end Charlies on the site.
Well, that's
and
good, yeah.
I do a bit of work in his private dressing room after he moved in properly.
Uh-huh.
And hanging up in the wardrobes.
Yeah.
Were some of his stage clothes.
Yes, so Michael Flatley's stage. There you are. You just happened to knock the wardrobe door. It opened up, and inside, again, if you'll forgive me, behold, the stage gear of Flatley. Yes.
And it was all bright, spangly colours.
Please, we know exactly what it was like. Yeah.
And when you're in a situation like that, you have just got to try them off.
Whoa, I was hoping you were going to say that. I thought you were going to say you snipped a piece off or took the cuff and inhaled deeply from which you drew strength, but you actually tried them on.
I tried.
Your heart must have been in your mouth.
And it was like wearing something that was my size is too small for me with a hanger still inside.
But you took your own gear off, did you?
No. Yeah, I was in t-shirts and shorts. I just put on. I couldn't get the strides on, but I put one of the jackets on.
But looking towards the door as one leg went in and it snagged a bit, and you must have been in a rush.
But the most important thing is, Andy, did you actually do a little bit of a river dance while you tried the costume on?
You know, I wish I had.
But did you look at yourself in a full-length mirror with Michael Flatley's stage clothes on?
Yes, I did.
Did you? Oh, you must have done a couple of steps. My man can only look at himself so long before a certain train of thought. This is entirely the wrong music, I know. Well done, by the way. Andy in Malden, a tremendous liberty. You've gone to the number one of the liberty poll there. Put on the Flatley's clothes. You would have to. You can't knock this sort of thing. Of course you'd have to. Here's Martin in his car, if he's still there, that'd be good enough. Martin?
Hello, Danny.
Oh, yeah, Martin, I understand you can tell us something about Amy LeMay's new passion and new skill of diving.
Oh, no, when you said I just got in the car and said diving, I thought, well, diving is also off of a cliff.
Yeah, or you haven't.
Well, the story goes that I rented a villa in Mallorca years ago.
Yeah.
And the main water pipeline from Palma had been cut off. So 3 days with no water, can't flush the toilet or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up moving into a hotel that was only in a German brochure.
All right. Right.
We were the only 2 English people there.
Yeah.
It was on the top of a cliff with the swimming pool and everything, and every day these 3 German guys used to come along, strut their stuff, and then jump off the cliff.
Oh, how beautiful, though. I mean, you're
I
so...
got
yeah.
very, very...
Envy, but you thought, well, come on. I know the phrase you want, and I'm not going to shy away from you. You looked at these Germans who every day, with their beautiful bodies glistening in the sun, would then perform a perfect arced dive into the ocean many hundreds of feet below, and you thought to yourself, well, look, who won the war? I'm not going to have this. I'm not going to have it. That's what you thought. I'm not shying away from that. So
actually, Daddy, they used to jump.
They used to jump.
I just got so fed up with it, I said to my wife, I'll see you in a minute.
And?
I walked up to the cliff.
Yeah.
I butted in front of them, for want of a better word.
Yeah, you butted in front of them,
at the end of the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so bloody high. Sorry. It was so high.
Yeah.
I had time to think on the way down. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what I'm going into here.
So you literally just walked to the edge of the cliff and just said, get out of my way, out of my I've business here. And off you went.
I dived off, yes.
And it's a real long way down.
It seemed like a long time. I had a enough time to think.
And what were you thinking?
Were you throwing a star shape?
I really shouldn't have done this, actually.
were you throwing a star shape? Were you in a curled up like a bomb?
A
proper swallow.
Yes.
And you were okay, though, when you hit the water?
I'm still here to talk to you.
Well.
The funny thing was, once I got to the end of the cliff...
Yeah.
All right, obviously, my hotel was at the top of the cliff. So I've now got no shoes or socks on or flip-flops or anything. And now I crippled myself.
Yeah.
Walking back.
Terrible.
When I walked back an hour later,
yeah,
after swimming round into the bay and walking up the road,
right,
yeah, what a great cheer.
Did you get a cheer?
And I never did it again.
Well, look at that. For king and country, because he's defending the honour there of 40... 43, I'm going to decide. I'm enjoying the moment. I'm actually saluting here. And he did what needed to be done. Let's just... Before you do it, just let us consider this again. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, it still beats in the heart of certain Englishmen that they're not going to have people going up and jumping off cliffs thinking, oh, so you think I won't jump off a cliff? I can imagine his wife said, look, just because the Germans are jumping off cliffs doesn't mean you've got to go and jump off it. Yes, dear, I'm afraid that's exactly what it means. All right, Carol, if you'd be good enough, would you wait there, Carol? She's taking a liberty. Amy LeMay's back with us, and we'll be right back in a second. Should we play Leo Sayer? Do you want to play Leo?
Yeah, well, dare okay, we, dare you, we, dare you, go on.
You know I can dance, you know I can dance. You know I can dance, you know I can dance. I can dance. Now wait a minute. Of course I can dance, of course I can dance. I'm sure I can dance, I'm sure I can dance, I can dance.
Sayer, backed by B.J. Cole and the group who went on to be Elvis Costello's Attractions, by the way. I love the way in that, of course, we all enjoy the fact that Leo rhymes caviar with kiar. And in his dance moves, he did a Rudy Valentino. Not known for his dancing, of course, at all. Shall we, Amy? Just once around. Carol's been hopefully hanging on over there in Tufnell Park. Carol.
Hi, hello.
Thank you for hanging on there, Carol, while Amy and I danced. Carol, taking liberties. I like these stories. We've had some.
I know, this is a real bad one.
Go on, what liberty have you taken?
Well, There used to be a statue of Freud outside the swimming pool at Swiss Cottage.
It's already very good. Yes. Yes.
And some years ago, when I was training to be a therapist, me and my friend Gresham went round with a camera and a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And I climbed up and he took my photo sitting on Freud's lap, whispering in his ear.
This is sensational. This is the kind of thing that only happens in Doctor in the House.
Christmas card.
No, when you said you were pretending to be a therapist, what were you talking about?
No, I was training to be a therapist.
Oh, you trained? I thought you said you were pretending. I thought it was even better. So you got a ladder and...
Got a ladder, climbed up. We took a series of photos of me whispering. The one I used as a Christmas card was me whispering in his ear, and I did like a bubble coming out of it with Tippex that said, you know, what do you want for Christmas, little girl, or something like that.
I'm not going to ask for them, but you still have them, I take it.
I do still have them, yes.
Well, is the statue still there, Carol?
Well, no, they've now moved it to outside the Tavistock Centre, which is like a very serious analytics centre. I wouldn't have dared do it if it was outside there.
Carol, of course it's a tremendous thing and a wonderful liberty, but whose idea was it? You're just sitting indoors, you know, scratching your arm, and you said, do you know what I think we should do? I mean, I'm curious of the genesis of these things.
To drive past, I'd get stuck in the traffic right outside the statue, and I just used to look, and because I used to think, you know, wouldn't it be lovely to sit on Freud's lap and all that sort of, and I thought, well, why don't I just do it?
You've realised the dream, all of us. All of us sit around thinking, you know what I'd like to do, like Chaplin, I think it's in modern times, isn't it, when they unveil that statue and he's laying in its lap, and all of us think, there's a statue somewhere we'd like to sit on the lap of. You've done it, I don't think that's a liberty, I think it is a dream lived, is what that is. Thank you, Carol. Here comes Paul the Cabbie, a diving story. Amy's been diving all last week. She is now... What is your official title?
I'm officially an open-water scuba diver.
And who'd have thunk, like, a month ago before this gig came in. Paul, what can you tell us about diving?
Hi, Candyman.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul. What can you tell us about the diving scene?
About 3 years ago, I went to Turkey, and I took my friend Mark along with me, and Mark's a big fella, he's 6'4", not scared of nothing.
Yeah.
So I said to him, look, why don't we go diving today, beginner's diving? I went the year before, I said, it's fantastic.
Amy did 4 days training before she went diving, and you're just going for the hell of it, okay.
Yeah, I'm just going for the hell of it. So he said, yes, let's go, let's ease up for it. So we went down there, we had the basic training, we had the kit on, and he said, we'll take you down, and while we're down there, we'll meet Ollie the Octopus. And Mark looked at me and said, Ollie the Octopus. I said, yeah, Ollie, it's all right. I've met him last year, it's fine. So you're swimming down about 9 metres.
Yeah.
And they go along and they tap on the rock down like this. They tap on the rock. And out comes Ollie the Octopus. And what they do, they...
No!
Yeah, and
not
they,
a real octopus. You mean like one in Button Moon?
About the size of a football.
Yeah.
And they feed him fish and everything. And all of a sudden, the octopus has seen Mark. And I've never seen the blood drain out of a man's face quickly.
I should imagine so. I don't think any other...
It was like... It was out of the water. I've never seen a man swim so fast. The octopus was chasing him. He was gone. And I could not stop laughing.
Well, what was your reaction on seeing this Ollie the Octopus? Because
I mean, the year before and touched him, you know, it was all right.
What do they feel like?
They feel like it's like someone grabbing your arm as tight as they can with stickers on. It's really strong.
Oh, I see. So one of the suckers got on you, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, now all I want to do is see an octopus. I bet you're the only of our listeners who's ever seen an octopus, really.
You never know.
But Ollie lives in a cave under the sea.
In Turkey, yeah, and they tap on the rock, and he comes.
You can knock for Ollie and he comes out to play.
That's it, mate. He's there.
That's squiddly diddly.
Squiddly diddly.
And here's something that people don't believe me whenever I say it. They have a beak, don't they? They have a beak.
They do. Like a crawfish sort of thing.
Like a proper cuttlefish hanging there. Like a budgerigar's beak they have. And then the people never believe me with that. Oh, well, that's a fantastic story. Thank you, Paul the Cabbie. You didn't see anything like an octopus, did you?
No, I didn't see any octopus. But I saw a starfish and I saw a stingray.
Oh, yes, you said the stingray.
Yeah, baby stingray.
An octopus, though, I don't know.
An octopus is...
That would be great.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's sharks in Grenada. You know, you can see sharks, you can see all sorts. I saw parrotfish, loads of fish.
Oh,
Giant coral, brain coral.
But you obviously weren't always in the water, because look at the colour of you.
I was studying by the pool, Dan.
I love the idea that the octopus started to chase his friend, you know.
Yeah.
Under the sea.
people that were on my course, they seemed to be from Switzerland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is a landlocked country.
Yeah, well, that's why they're fascinated with the sea. They don't ever get to see it.
But also, you know, Dan, there was this guy who was learning how to dive. Well, no, actually, he wasn't learning. He was an accomplished diver.
Yeah.
He came on one of the dive trips.
Yeah.
Do you know what he was wearing?
Oh.
A wig. And I thought, how's he going to get in the water? Because he's going to float to the top. You know?
Yeah, but it was quite obviously a wig.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, like a big ginger thing on the top of his head. Really badly.
And so everyone's gathered around, and the instructor's saying, now, we'll be diving in about 20 minutes. Before we do, here's some things you should know, but you can't hear a word because you're thinking, what is he wearing?
Well, I was just waiting for it to float to the surface.
That's all there's left of him.
But then he took out this really old-fashioned cap. You know, like the kind that you used to wear, I imagine people wear, like in the 20s when they went motor driving or something, you know?
Oh, with flaps.
You know, like a little flap thing.
Yeah.
And he adjusted the flaps all around his face and tied it under his chin so his wig wouldn't float to the top of the water.
Amy, only you could come back with such a top-of-the-shop diving story. Aruga Baruga, I think, is the only appropriate response to that. Good afternoon, everyone. We're asking you, what have you got that used to belong to someone else? Who's got something that used to belong to you? Is it maybe somebody of note's got something? What could you have had, and what did you once have? Plus, ever taken a liberty? Like these stories we're hearing here, the people, a fellow working in Michael Flatley's house and saw his stage clothes hanging up, so just pop them on for a second. That's a good liberty.
I just don't know how he resisted not even doing a little bit of shoe shuffling there.
Sure he did. I just think he didn't, he didn't know if Michael was listening and might sue. But then a previous caller, as we just heard, sat in the lap of a statue after dark and had a photo took on the statue of Freud. What's there, Amy?
A couple of emails. margaret.rutherford@bbc.co.uk is the address. Natalie's been back in touch. She says, thanks for trying to get me on the island. Danny's just too harsh, but she has had nitrogen narcosis. So we need a nitrogen narcosis.
Oh, call us up.
You know, that's that illness when you dive down too far.
It's an illness.
Crazy.
You said it's like being drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much nitrogen in your body. Well, you go crazy.
You feel like
you go nuts. Yeah. And Johnny in Isleworth says that his dad proposed to his mom while diving in Mexico.
Oh, I've seen that stock footage of the wedding underwater. I wonder if it was there.
No, they do them. They do weddings underwater where I've just been diving.
They're way ahead over there, aren't they? That's good, isn't it? That's a great thing to be doing. Oh, no. One time I'm going to play Acadian Driftwood, and it won't play. Listen, everyone, look. Would have been the band. What a shame. Oh, this is the greatest song ever recorded, and my copy's all busted. Listen.
That's not the greatest song ever recorded.
Yeah, Acadian Driftwood's pretty close. It's pretty close. It's mighty. I don't play it often, but it's pretty mighty. Oh, okay. Here's a Georgia in Brixton. I don't say that with a heavy heart, Georgia. I've been coming to you anyway, but my copy of Acadian Driftwood's all messed up.
Well, at least it means I don't have to hang on to it.
Exactly. and I'm sure, you know, the two ex-members of the band who have shuffled off this mortal coil are looking, Dan, saying, Dan, make way for Georgia.
Exactly.
Georgia, what's the liberty you have taken? You found yourself taking a liberty. What is it?
I did. Well, the Michael Flatley story is the one that made me think of it. I haven't thought of it for a rather long time, and I blushed when I did.
Those are the stories we want.
Slept with George Michael's trousers.
Ladies and gentlemen, now, hang on, whoa, because yesterday, and you know, this is not the idea, you know, the humour of the show, but we heard somebody who held George Michael's shuttlecock for just a few seconds. We did.
I didn't hear that.
No, yes, somebody.
Well, I topped it then.
No, yours is definitely topping it. Don't worry, this is just a shuttlecock. He threw it from the stage in the early set when he used to be in a tennis gear, and this kid, as he was then, caught it, but all the girls descended on him and beat the life out of him and nicked it. He only had it for a short while. So tell us how on earth you came to sleep with the almost mighty trousers of the Michael.
Of the Michael with the cutest bum in the world.
So you think, yeah.
I was doing a music video with him in Paris, and I had a bit of a crush, obviously.
Did you? That must be awful to be working with someone you've got a crush on. I mean, I've asked Bailyn about it, but, yeah.
Anytime anyone said George, we both said yes, which was a bit embarrassing. Anyway, at the end of the day, his kind of mind the right-hand man gave me George's trousers and asked me if I could get them dry cleaned for the following morning. Well, it was kind of 8 o'clock in Paris in the evening, and I said I'd do my best.
Yeah.
There were no dry cleaners and the hotel was having none of it, so I thought, well, there's nothing else to do, really.
What do you mean there's nothing else to do? You put them on?
No, I put them under my pillow.
I can't think of anything more revolting. No, Amy's all for it, but I can only see wavy lines coming off them. You put them under your pillow?
I put them under my pillows. Well, it's kind of depressing them, I thought, and then I thought I'd always be able to say that I slept with George Michael.
Well, you did, but let me ask you one thing.
Did they reference
No, don't say that. And of course they didn't, but I want to ask you one thing here, Georgia. Can I ask you, what dreams did come that night? What did you dream that night, if anything?
Now, this is a nice, fake family day.
Oh, I suppose so, yes. Is it that kind of thing? But occasionally you must have rolled over in the night and thought, this pillow's high. Oh, that's right. George's trousers are under.
Well, you know what's even funnier is that my husband at the time had even bigger crush on George than I do, which was a bit of a worry.
Well, there you go. I understand that it can happen.
He was thrilled forever. He just dined out on that story for a very long time. But his wife had slept with George Michael's trousers.
But Georgia, and when you were handed these trousers back, did you blush?
I was a little bit.
I should imagine. It's very, very difficult to carry off sleeping with someone's trousers unbeknownst to them.
Yeah.
And then running into them the next day because you can just see them.
I was the next day and I gave them back to him and he put them on and we found them.
And you thought, if only you knew. Oh, be still my beating heart. I want to tell him. Well, look at that. I can imagine it. I should imagine every time Georgia looked at him after that, he won't have them on. He'll be standing there like Cardew the Cad Robinson used to in High Farce with no trousers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right, if Jason's good enough, we'll come to you after the break for Jason's story of when he took liberties. Amy, give us a quick one.
Yeah, this is just a quick one. This is from Tim in Crystal Palace. He says, to my mate Steve, who works on the railways, I think you might have my complete collection of Mad Don Martin comic strip books.
Oh.
I lent them to you when I was 18. They're probably still at your mum's.
This is great.
I'm now 42.
There you go. Never mind the statute of limitations. We are talking about if someone of note has got yours, something of yours. But if there's something you want to shout out, as they say, just like that, to someone who you borrowed something to a long time ago, and you want to use the BBC to say, can I have it back, please? Then you can text us, 0778-6200-949. For the diving stories, taking liberties, what did you used to have? All of those, 0207-224-2000 on margaret.rutherford@bbc.co.uk.
BBC London 94.9, it's 4:05.
You're listening to London's radio station.
Danny Baker on BBC London 94.9.
Hey, Jen, who stole the kish car?
Someone stole the kishka. Who stole the kishka from the butcher shop? Who stole the kishka? Who stole the kishka?
If you can bear it, Jason, on the other side of this, coming straight to you over there in Rainer's Park. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Jason in Rainer's Park's been hanging on forever. Jason! He's here, isn't he? Jason! There he is. After all that, I pulled the wrong lever.
20 minutes now,
yes, he has, and Jason's good enough to do that for us, because he knows he's got something we all want to hear now. Have you ever taken a liberty stakes? Thank you very much indeed for hanging on, Jason. What's the story?
Well, many years ago, I was in graphic design, and I was doing a photo shoot.
Yeah.
For this famous star.
Mm.
So I found out where for his album cover they were photographing. I decided to go and have a look at the clothes he was going to wear.
Mm.
And so I see this big beige suit.
Mm.
And I thought, I've got to try this on. So I put the suit on.
Beige
just
suit.
Just as I was putting my leg into the trousers, in came Engelbert Humperdinck.
Now,
he's been in here.
Is it Engelbert Humperdinck soup we're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, see, okay. I didn't know if he just came in and said.
He's a big guy. Do you remember when he was in
here? He is quite a big fella. Now, you have one leg inside Engelbert Humperdinck's trousers, and in walks, of all the people, Engelbert Humperdinck. Okay, now what do you do?
So, he said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm the tailor. I'm just checking.
Whoa, genius. That is good. I'm afraid I haven't used the old round of applause for a long time, but that is right out of the top drawer. That's like the old Max Miller when the wife walks in, he came home and there was a naked fella in his house, and he said to his wife, "What's the story here?" And she went, "Now, don't lose your temper, don't go raving mad, he's a nudist and he's coming to use the phone." Now that's clever thinking, and you have done exactly that. Did he buy it?
Yeah, because he said, "Hang on, stay there," and came back with three pairs of trousers and said, "These need taking up."
So what did you do with the three pair of trousers handed to you by Engelbert Humperdinck?
Well, no, I've now got four pairs of trousers and his jacket.
Right, and did you depart with them?
I was just walking out, and I'm working out a way. Can I flog them?
not do the decent thing and take them to an invisible man, just have them taken up. Mind you, you might have had to go on tour with him then. Yeah.
And I hadn't had this job long, and as I'm walking along the corridor, my governor turns up, and he says, "Where have you been? And what are they? Mm. What are you doing with them?" Because he knows the clothes, because he's doing the photographic.
Oh, I see.
You know, because it's the firm I'm working for. So I goes, "He's caught hold of me, and he wants them altered." So he's gone, "Well, give them here, and I'll get it sorted."
Oh, you are the world's luckiest man. I mean, very good for your quick thinking. You deserve this. But you didn't just palm them off onto him and just, you know... You should have just legged it.
Well, these were days before eBay. This is over 20 years ago.
Yeah, but even so, do you know what? I've got to be absolutely honest with you, Jason. We should, as an experiment, put a pair of trousers formerly owned by Engelbert Humperdinck on eBay. And I don't think we're going to get a tenner. I think you've missed the boat, in particular, in this respect.
Yeah.
And you never crossed his path again after that, I take it? Because
not really. But the thing with the jacket was, it was all whalebone ribbed.
Mm.
How about that? Put it on, it was actually like a corset. So
that's not unusual in showbiz circles. My very dear friend Jonathan Ross doesn't actually have that, but he has a certain something built into his jackets. Yeah.
Does he? Tummy control?
But believe me, those are not ordinary jackets. And he can easily, because you can't get ordinary jackets off your tax at the end of the year, because the tax man quite rightly says you could wear those in your social life. Those are not television suits, but Jonathan's, which have this device, actually have.
What's the device?
Another time, perhaps. It's Paul in Staines. Paul!
Good
afternoon, Paul. A terrific story you're following there, but I'm sure you're up to it. It's things you used to have. You had it once, and now you're thinking, what's the matter with me? Why don't I have that? If I had that, everything would be all right. What is it?
Well, it sort of turns out on its head a bit. We travelled a lot in America in 2002. For my wife and I, and visited Elvis's birthplace.
Okay.
Which is essentially a museum with the cast-offs from Graceland.
Okay.
A small wooden shack.
Oh, right. It is literally a small wooden shack, is it?
It is, yeah. Okay. In the grounds of a big parking lot and gift shop and museum.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were in the little wooden shack, there was this dear old lady telling stories about Elvis.
Mm.
And I think I was somewhat pushed on by the fact that at Graceland you can't touch anything, or if you sit on anything an alarm goes off.
I'll bet, yeah.
So I spied on the bedside table, there was a little book, a little hardback book, and I think it was Cat on a Hot Tin Roof or something, I can't remember.
Right.
But I had a copy of, you remember that Eat Shoots and Leaves?
Yes, of course. Well, this is quite recent then, yeah, okay.
Roughly the same size.
Yeah.
And roughly the same colour.
Well,
so whilst the old dear was regaling other people's stories, I swapped them.
No, you swapped. Yeah, that's the word we're looking. He swapped them. That's what he did. Yeah. So you swapped them, and
well, that was it.
Have you still got Elvis's copy of
I've still got it. Yeah.
Oh, well, you have. I thought this was something you used to have. Oh, you've actually got.
Well, he used to have a copy of Eats, Shoots and Leaves.
Yeah, but yes, exactly. He used to have that, but now
my book is now part of the Elvis estate, and my copy of
The Elvis estate may say, no, sir, your copy of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is part of the Elvis estate, and then you'd have to go on the lam, as we criminals say. But
foolishly and probably irrationally, when we left America and went through customs, I did have this slight fear.
Of course you have. You're carrying contraband. You are carrying a part of the estate of one of the most famous and litigious organisations in the world. But
there
you
was nothing to mark it as such.
Doesn't matter. That's what Hayes said in Midnight Express. There's nothing to mark it out as mine. In fact, it was taped to his leg, as your book was. It's neither here nor there. Thank you, Paul in Staines. Look at that. I mean, that's taking liberty and something he's got that used to belong to somebody else.
Well, listen to this. Gil, or is it Jill in Easton, says, "I once slipped my cigarette from Jimmy Dean's Zippo lighter because it was on eBay a couple of weeks back. And he says that I've known the seller since junior school. He offered to light a cigarette for him.
And
the Zippo belonged to James Dean.
I suppose you'd take your time over that, wouldn't you?
Oh, you really
would.
Take
your time. Hang on. No, don't take it away. And you'd gaze into the flame, hoping to see the face of Jimmy Dean himself.
Oh, man.
Looking back out at you and saying, hey, enjoy that butt on me. That's what he'd say. Enjoy the... How you doing? Alex Clark just wanders in, you know, as if out of a trap. And, of course, I'm beginning today's Friday. Did you hear the story of the contraband copy of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof then?
I did not.
Yeah, somebody saw it. They were going around Elvis Presley's house, the house of his birth, the birthplace of all democracy, if you will. And there on the floor was there on the side was a copy of Cat on the Hot Tin Roof, and apparently had been there since Elvis left. They'd left the house exactly as the king left it, and he had a copy of Eat Shoots and Leaves. So he just thought, and just did the old switcheroo. Yeah. And now, people who go to Elvis's house say, the whole place is baloney. Do you see that? What an anachronism. What an anachronism. That's how they talk down in Nashville. What an anachronism. So that got switched over.
And there's no reason to think that Elvis was bad at punctuation, is there?
None at all. I mean,
so
you know.
It lacked any kind of...
Well, the fact it was born, what I was thinking about, almost 30 years after his death, it was published. It also, as I say, may throw some suspicion upon the place. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And what's going on in the world of literature? Amy, look at the colour of Amy, by the way. And she's looking well. But she's always turned out well, but now she's like, her Italian roots are showing.
Yeah. I've been learning to dive in Grenada. I'm writing an article for The Times about it.
The Times sent her to the Caribbean to learn how to dive there.
That's the kind of thing you want from a newspaper.
That's the kind of thing I want from a newspaper.
How
yes,
do you get
is.
That gig?
Well, she's Amy LeMay. Things happen to her.
I know. Yeah, well, you look very well.
Look, you suddenly look wearier. Your eyes came half down, then you went, why do I bother?
So, well, because I don't get sent to knees.
You get lots of free books.
I do get lots of
And what are we going to talk about this week?
And this week I thought I would start with the actress Julie Walters, who has written a novel.
Has she? No,
she has.
Really?
Hang on. Actress novel. I'm going to my shelter for a while. How does it work out?
Well, so unexpectedly, because there have been quite a lot of... You know, Pauline McLynn's written a couple of novels, for example,
but
Father Ted. You know, all sorts of comedians write novels all the time. So you sort of think...
Naomi Campbell.
She didn't write anything, to be fair.
It was called Black Swan, I remember, wasn't it? Naomi Campbell.
Isn't it right that some comedians write novels with the view to them kind of, you know, having a film option? You know, it may be that writing the novel isn't the kind of first...
I would say this is pretty hard to film, actually.
Is it? Why?
It's completely unexpected. It's not what you think at all. And I spoke to her earlier in the week.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed her earlier in the week about it. And part of it is that she didn't particularly want to come out with something that would just play into, you know, be something by Julie Walters that would be
so
to
how did then
so it's very dark, mm-hmm. for example.
All
I
right.
know there are sort of elements of darkness in some of her comic roles, mm-hmm. aren't there? So maybe it's not that surprising.
When you say I run in the other direction when I hear the word dark. I think it covers all kinds of things these days. And it's always supposed to, you know, hint at gravity and depth, but sometimes it can just be someone getting their throat cut, you know. But so how does this pan out?
Well, it's about three actresses in New York. One of them is on Broadway. She's won a Tony. She's in a play. And she's invited her two friends to come and stay with her for the end of the run. And they'll have a great time. So off they go. One of them goes insane the minute she arrives and goes missing. And is really properly...
Probably gone.
And the other one goes a bit mad because she's about to be outed by the press back in London, and she's run away from all that.
So she
also goes missing.
All right.
So there's mental illness and breakdown and...
Sexual intrigue
and horrible rows between people and drunkenness and the woman...
And of course, the first question you asked, Julie, was... Who are they?
Yeah, precisely. Well, brilliant. She said it was prompted by an episode when I went to New York, where it's set, with somebody who went a bit bonkers and went missing, and it sort of prompted him. So, of course, when we had, you know, should we have some questions from the audience? This was in front of an audience. And, of course, the first person said, who was it then?
The first question. The public are great. The public are top.
And we didn't get that out of her. And she, of course, said, as all novelists always do, it's a composite portrait, of course. You know, there are bits.
Well, is there humour in there as well, though?
There is, but it's very, very dark humour. Very, very black humour. There is. There are some funny bits, but it's really intensely written. And very, very gripping, actually.
But, gripping. What's it called?
It's called Maggie's Tree.
Okay, Maggie's Tree.
And the central character who goes bonkers and thinks she's being pursued by the Holy Ghost and must, all this kind of thing, is called Maggie.
All right, Maggie's Tree. So, and you sound pleasantly surprised by it, as if you thought you knew what it was going to be.
Well, I thought it would be a kind of knockabout rom-com. And I'm fairly allergic to those kind of things, and it wasn't. So it has a kind of really sort of considerable amount of depth. And now she's, I think she's having a little rest, she said, and then she's going to write her autobiography, which she's been already, you know, in advanced terms, I think, is a big deal. She's
There's a lot of autobiographies. I love, that's all I ever read, autobiography. But there's,
you can't move from them at the moment,
there is a glut
you?
Of them at the minute,
right
it?
Now, I mean, they're
popular
kind of
Christmas gifts, aren't they?
But even so, by the standards of this time of year, but even by those standards, there's a lot around at the minute. Just because the whole market's been widened out into, you know, I think even the old Chantel's got hers out. There it is. That's fine. And
Are you publishing yours then?
Well, man, I'm taking this to the grave. You know that, Aim. I swore to you, I'd take it to the grave. You know, but So 50 years of Chinaman, you know I want to call it that. So there's number one. What's number two?
Number two is, particularly for this radio station, it's The Book of Lists, London, by Nick Renison, and it is a book of London lists, published by Canongate, $9.99. Really nice little book, you know, tenner. Very good Christmas gift, actually. And it's 120 or so lists, everything odd about London.
Oh, okay.
But better than just, you know, lists can get a bit grindingly dull, in my view. I know that's perhaps a female view.
No, it's quite right. I mean, you're going to have to sell me that, the London list book, because, you know.
Done, do you think?
Not been done, but it's just, just a relentless list of one things about one capital, you know.
But no, properly kind of quirky, actually, and also sort of fleshed out with real detail.
Right.
So, there are the kind of obvious things, like the list of curious street names, you know, Mount Nod Road, Quaggy Walk, Ha Ha Road.
I was going to say,
is on my list. That's
near Woolwich, isn't it? Yeah. Ha Ha Road, because Ha Ha is a little hill.
It's a little, but isn't it a ditch?
A ditch, maybe a ditch. Well, one side of a ditch is a little hill, isn't it?
Yeah.
There you go.
We won't get into an argument with you about topographical features.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No,
quite right.
No way is it an isthmus. No way is it an isthmus. Yeah.
But I bet you, it's awful when you say, I bet you don't know why, because you probably do. Why is Piccadilly called Piccadilly? Do you know that?
I do know it, once you tell us.
Because of the Tudor word Piccadilly.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a square of material, and Piccadilly comes from a wealthy tailor called Robert Baker, who built a house there that was nicknamed Piccadilly Hall.
And the, because Robert Holmes, you know, of course, is all over this.
This is right up his street,
actually. But there's a street in Deptford High Street, off Deptford High Street, called Finch Street. Right. Nothing in there, except it's got two F's at the beginning. Finch Street. And that I've never figured out.
Are they little F's
as
well?
No, two F's. Finch Street. Two F's. Well, it wouldn't matter if it was little F's.
Well, sometimes you see at the beginning of people's names, there's a novelist called Jasper Fufford.
Is there?
Yeah.
Is there?
Yes.
I don't know Jasper Fufford.
There's a Jasper Fufford.
What an absurd affectation. It seems like the fella's living for pleasure alone.
I'm imagining it's something for French, but, you know.
Oh, well, okay. Well,
I'm
that's
just guessing,
then,
really.
Some councillor called Finch.
We are.
Okay.
So, all sorts of good things like that. Pub, I didn't know how, you know, the pub in Bishopsgate, Dirty Dick's. Do you know who Dirty Dick is?
No,
actually,
isn't
entirely explained, but there is a 19th century ironmonger. This is really sad. He was like a sort of male Miss Havisham. He became a recluse because his fiancée died the day before their wedding.
And he kept,
his house absolutely as well. And nothing was touched. And then when he died...
Mind you, that goes for most men who live alone.
Tragedy or no tragedy.
Exactly. Oh, so he never
that's
did any housework or anything, eh?
That's liberation,
what an eccentric.
Isn't it?
Yes. Anyway, but don't you think it was
right.
That kind
Sorry,
of thing?
Sorry, that's
yeah.
very... Anyway, so that's what... And then the publican who took it over just bought it lock, stock and barrel, I guess for a knockdown price, because it was in some kind of terrible condition, and turned it into that pub. And that's kind of interesting. I mean,
I'm not being hard on the book, but, you know, so the word lists can make people roll their eyes these days.
Well, I think you need a bit of sort of fleshed out stuff.
Yeah,
you
because need... these all began years ago with the People's Almanac. The People's Almanac used to be a fantastic thing, who then went on to do the Book of Lists, those people. They did the original ones.
Yes,
20
which
years
inspired,
ago,
exactly.
Which now,
inspired,
of course,
those,
I used to,
yes,
man, before
precisely.
The internet, I used to run entire shows on those. That was good things. Mm. So I have looked through my lorgnette at these, but I trust that this is
well,
a good
Well, I thought this was a very good one. I like to hear about
like
a cross-dresser in Uno. When you have a list, London cross-dresses, I think it's not
That's
going badly.
Oh, yeah,
you
it's
find out that there was an 18th
How'd they keep it down to just 20, though, Amy?
Tell me.
They were there in the 18th century. There was a French diplomat and spy who dressed as a woman at the French court, came to London after the French Revolution, and blah, blah, blah.
You get on a pirate ship, it's like the scene in Monty Python for the stoning, you know. It is, you know, and it says, are there any women present? No. Most people, you tear their beard off in the 18th century, and there they were. So this is all in the Book of...
The Book of Lists by London by Nick Renison, published by Cunningham, £9.99, I really... liked very much.
Okay.
And then my last book is called The Act of Roger Murgatroyd by Gilbert Adair.
All right.
He's quite a posh novelist, mm-hmm. and has it's one of those books that has in underneath an entertainment.
All right.
So you realise that this is for laughs. He's playing this one for laughs. And what it is an absolutely sort of, well, I suppose it's an homage to Agatha Christie.
Is it?
You know, it's a kind of faithful replication of the old style Agatha Christie murder.
Oh,
maybe I like
good.
This because I.
Not a parody, though, is it? It's not a parody.
Well,
I wouldn't like that.
It's got sort of parody elements. You have to be truthful. There are kind of, you know, he's taken all the stock characters. Uh-huh. You know, there's the. There's Evadne Mount, the crime-writing, rather gruff lady crime-writer who's staying in there. But I like it because it's a locked-room mystery.
No,
you know,
those are good.
A body is found in an attic,
even
locked.
Even in parody, those are great, yeah.
They're great, aren't they? Because you don't know what's going on. So I just noticed this kind of vogue for 1930s kind of... It's pastiche more than parody, maybe.
Right, okay.
Because Mark Gatiss,
the Vesuvius Club.
The Vesuvius Club. There's a new one coming out.
Is there
I haven't
one
read
Mark?
It. There's one called The Devil in Amber. It's out in a month's time or something. Three weeks' time, maybe. And there is a real... You know, I've seen a couple.
It's a shame that they have to do that tongue-in-cheek thing when in fact, I suppose you must do in order to sell it to a weary postmodern world, the idea that, look, you know, you can't use that language and evoke those scenes without doing it with quotation marks around it, because I think that on their own, I just enjoy them anyway. I'm playing
well,
myself to you.
Well, I still love to read Agatha Christie, but you do read them and think, wow, you couldn't write that nowadays.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's called Ten Little Indians.
Exactly.
Even that.
And then there were none these days.
Yes, at five titles. What's
Alex,
there?
We've had an email in from Mark in Blackheath. He says, you know, your listeners write novels too, by the way.
Mark, shame on you.
I'm terribly sorry.
And he's, can I pass this on to you? Do you mind? He's written a novel called City Boy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, perhaps if you...
Well, there's nothing wrong with opportunity.
Absolutely
that's
not. It's, yeah.
That's all right. Because you don't
good.
Get sent many books.
No, I hardly get any. No,
what are you reading at the moment, Alex?
Yeah, your six volume is now. It's now six volumes. Something.
I put that aside for a minute.
Uh-huh.
And I'm reading the new Sue Townsend book, which I will report on to you next week. It's called Queen Camilla.
For the first time ever yesterday, I suggested a guest, and he was on the show this time yesterday, Andy Stanton, who has written, without doubt, the best children's book in the last 10 years, and I'm including everyone you want, Roald Dahl and J.K. Rowling. Andy Stanton has written, and it's a slim volume, it's nuts, it's funny, and it's called You're a Bad Man, Mr. Gum, and I read it. Just bought it on the off chance. I'm always trying to find some book that keeps us both amused. Read it to Mancy before the weekend, and she literally held her sides, and we read it again and again and again. It's the most inventive writer, kids writer, if you like, but certainly I've read in a long time. Andy Stanton's You're a Bad Man, Mr. Gum. There's someone here, Peter Maloney. I've just been handed this. I heard the interview with Andy Stanton yesterday, and I thought, I'm going to buy this book solely on the back of the enthusiasm. On Sunday, we got to Paris for you. Well, I hope I didn't oversell it, but it's a terrific book. And reading out loud is quite difficult. There's elements of, you know, and it it just is a wonderful book. Have a look at that, Andy Stanton's one. There's one for you. Sorry, you're reading
the new Sue Townsend book, which imagines what life would be like in a republic if Charles and Camilla had to live in a council house.
You know you've got the invitation to come and live on an island with us. Do you know this?
How tempting. Which
island? Oh, look at the people are killing each other, strangling
I
each
want
other.
To come.
Oh, okay. You see, I thought it was again, it was you were being all observer.
Storytelling by the fire.
Yeah, you've got to run the twirling carousel.
We've had enough. The other week we just.
But what island is it?
It's our own island. No, it's our own island. There's only 50 listeners and their dependents have become. We've run it for a week now. And seriously, we're going to pull up the little rope ladder. And
you all need a library, don't you?
No, we just need you because you're part of the show. So you're going to come. And anyone who comes near us, we're going to say, attention, attention, go away. Thank you very much. we're not part of the wicked
world. But it would be really good if Alex could run the library.
It would be. We've got a librarian.
Will there be any telly?
No. Nope. Well, it may be. Okay. They're not going to be again. I'll keep it locked up. It'll be a need to know. But
we'll just make it.
You're in control of the telly.
Well, yeah. Don't say it like that. I'm not exactly what. What do you think? I mean, there's certain European Cup ties I have to do. I have to look at for the time. As I explain to my wife regularly, I'm watching this because I write a football column. I would rather be watching the other side. I mean, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading Richard Ford's new novel, The Lay of the Land.
The third in the final installment of the sports writer trilogy.
Yeah, that's right. And it's brilliant. But although it's got a lot of similarities to Philip Roth, although he's kind of just like a normal kind of average American white guy, where Philip Roth very much writes from a Jewish perspective. It's set on the Jersey Shore, exactly where I grew up. So I picked it up and I thought, oh, it's really evocative for me. Although I think
So you're reading a trilogy right now.
Yeah,
you're reading a trilogy right now.
Tetralogy.
You're reading a tetralogy, and I'm recommending you're a bad man, Mr. Gum. Okay, thank you very much, everyone.
Alex Gum, thank you.
94.9 FM, BBC London.
94.9. Next update, 2:15.
What's so funny about November?
Your number.
Endless nights of noisy fireworks.
Disgusting.
Shops insisting that it's already Christmas.
Laughing for the idea.
Or the annual BBC London Night of Comedy for Children in Need. Al Murray, Lucy Porter, Shappy Crossandy, The Penny Dreadfuls, Jason Wood and the unique Big Wow are just a few of the acts appearing on Tuesday, the 14th of November at the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
From the Salvation Army to Falaraki in 2 rows.
Tickets are just £11, so for the best seats in the house, buy now at the Shepherd's Bush Empire box office. Or for a small booking fee, buy online or by phone. Full details are on the BBC London website.
You've been a sensational audience, and I'm not going anywhere.
BBC London's Night of Comedy for Children in Need. Tuesday, the 14th of November. Or as we call it around here, Yes-vember.
Ah, well, Mountain Goat come back and said, listen, you never do any of the adverts here, and give me a punchline. Long-time friend of the show, David Bowie, you may remember from the 1970s, was in yesterday and did a little session from us. This is a song he's got called Starman.
What time it was, lights were low, oh, oh, I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh, some cat was laying down some kid and on rock and roll, he said. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade, came back like a slow voice on a wave of fade. That was no DJ, that was hazy cosmic jazz. There's a star man waiting in the sky. Like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'll blow our minds. There's a star man waiting in the sky. Told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. Tell me, let the children use it. Let the children use it.
From 1972, before the album was released, David Bowie and his little group of musicians came into the BBC and said, we've got some new songs if you want to hear them. And that's just about the very first public hearing precious time Anne got. Good afternoon, everyone. Ever taken a liberty? We've got Jason and John who are about to tell us. Yes, they have. We've had some tremendous stories of that. Yeah. What have you got that used to belong to someone else? Perhaps top of the shop there is the fleek of Van Gogh's sunflowers that somebody saw on the floor in front of the painting and then just took it home. And it's in a matchbox now. It used to belong to Van Gogh or even the world. That, but not anymore, that fleek. What have you got there?
Well, here's one for you. This is from Jack and Welling. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with things that once belonged to somebody else. He says, here's a list of other people's stuff that I've acquired. Uh-huh. Tommy Steele's towel radiator.
Very good.
Justin Haywood's outside coach lamp.
All good.
John Lodge's red tag Levi jacket.
Much prized.
He says, I got this from my father-in-law, who was Pink Floyd's, then later Justin Haywood's personal builder.
And he like said, we're going to go, where did you get that?
Yeah, and he said that they just used to, quote-unquote, give him stuff.
Yeah.
He's got Quentin Crisp's coffee table.
Oh, he led us in there. Okay.
He says, bear in mind, Norman, my father-in-law, is a bit like your old man, Dan. Mm. An imposing figure who you just don't say no to. And, P.S., he almost had Justin Haywood's Mrs. brand new mink coat after they had an argument. But as it didn't fit the red setter, had it as a bed. Sorry, so...
There were two points there. You hesitated. He said he nearly had Justin Haywood's Mrs. And I thought, he's really kept the best till last. Here comes John in Hendon. John!
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
Good as gold, John. We're asking people, no. It's a bit of a confessional, but ever taken a liberty? What's the story, John?
Well, this is my old man. Uh-huh. Her and my granddad, they went to Buckingham Palace last year for the World War II celebration.
Okay.
My granddad flew Lancasters.
All right.
And I said to her, why are you taking a pair of Rose secateurs in your bag?
Okay.
And she says, well, I've got a couple of cuttings, haven't I?
A couple of cuttings from Buckingham Palace's own garden, yeah?
Indeed.
Yeah.
And they are now resplendent in the granddad's garden.
What does she say? Of course, you could have earned a fortune here, ring out my newspaper and said, look what I smuggled into Buckingham Palace, a pair of secateurs. Yes, it looks like anyone of a certain age can walk into Buckingham Palace and help themselves. She wasn't stopped at any point, I take it?
Nah, not at all, mate.
No. And how are they growing, the royal buds?
Fine, absolutely fine.
But you have to leave people outside and say, what do you think of those? And I said, very nice. No. The smell is unique. The smell is rare. Those belong to the Queen. Now, I don't know. I know you're not supposed to roast a swan, but who amongst us hasn't? But it's the first time I've heard of this. So I didn't even think twice about it. Just thought, going to Buckingham Palace, I'll have some of that.
I'll have some cuttings.
Yeah, that's your thing. Thank you very much indeed. John in Hendon. And that's taking a liberty. It is taking a liberty. But it's it's obviously something that all property is theft. And Her Majesty, I'm sure, would, even if she'd have got a chance to ask, would have let her have them. Here's Jason in Surrey. Jason.
Good afternoon.
Jason, what's the story? What have you got for us in terms of taking a liberty? What have you got?
Well, I don't know if it's a liberty or a risk, but in the marquee business many years ago.
You're in the what?
Marquees.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, building marquees. Uh-huh. And we were once building a marquee in the grounds of Hatfield House.
All right.
Out there on the A1.
Uh-huh.
And within the confines of the house is apparently, so we were told, a very, very, very early example of the Flushing WC.
Very early example, okay.
And this was a house once used by good King Henry himself.
Oh, that would be a very early example of a Flushing WC.
And it is obviously now strictly an exhibit, very much out of bounds.
But
one found oneself on a Monday morning outside in the grounds building a marquee and filling the urge of the morning constitutional.
I see. And then, of course, we can see where this is going. But this,
you to preempt that.
But even so, but this fixture, is it not in a kind of alarmed glass case?
Well, not quite, no. It's in a very grand corridor as you go through the main doors, but somewhat itself an exhibit.
Yeah, and?
And there is normally a very studious, very sort of efficient sort of guard, as it were, ushering people in and out. And anyway, as I say, about 9:30 one morning, the urge took one.
And it worked?
The main principle, the point of it was the fact that I crept in through the main doors thinking I would ask where is a more modern and usable facility.
Yes.
but there was nobody there.
Oh, no, okay, well, you know, I feel...
You can imagine one might be a little bit tempted.
I don't think anyone really could censor you for trying to, you know, empty your honest bladder in having made all the right inquiries and exhausted all those avenues, and so...
Well, yeah, and the need was such, and it was... And there was nobody there, and there was the door slightly ajar, and... You can visualise
I can see, I know all of that, and...
I think a man such as yourself would have been tempted to do the same.
Oh, well, you know, don't get me wrong here. I know it's a liberty, but nevertheless, I suspect that, you know, you didn't try as hard as you might. But how did it all work? I mean, it was fine, the actual ancient fiction?
Oh, it was fantastic, but it just sort of reminded me of the fact that we call it the throne room.
Yeah, so, you know, there's going to be a bit of that.
Yeah, there was a legal moment of sitting down.
And this was, a 500-year-old fixture?
Well, I guess so. It's a sort of Tudor house, and like reputedly used by King Henry, whether he actually
Whether you were the first
himself or not. But
I bet he let Cardinal Wolsey use it. I bet he did. I mean, Cardinal Wolsey was saying these protracted talks here. I do apologise. But not at all. It's second on the left over there, and I'm sure Wolsey would have, you know, at one time.
Oh, he did repay him by giving him Hampton Court Palace.
Yeah, exactly,
which is where I grew up. Well, in the confines of the.
Well, Jason, thank you for having so much tact and tiptoeing around that story. That's exactly the way to tell that, and I saw Amy had the interest there, of course, because nothing moves in the fictions and fittings of the bathroom without her old man giving the say-so.
Oh, yeah.
Who's this Henry guy, and how comes he's gone independent? Mm-hmm. What have you got over there, Amy?
Well,
what
this is from Perry, who sent us a text. 07786200949 is the number, and he says, when Bob Geldof was with Paula, I used to clean their windows. Oh. He says, I was in his office in the basement when I saw his guitar. He wasn't at home, so I strummed it. Just the ones.
That's all right.
We also did Watford Town Hall. It was Saturday morning and not many people around, so I sat in the mayor's chair. I was very disappointed because he had a Liverpool mug.
Elmer?
No, the mayor of Watford.
Oh, the mayor of Watford has a Liverpool mug. Yeah. And strumming Bob Geldof's guitar.
Yeah, I mean, that's taking liberties, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's taking a liberty, but it's, you know, minor one. Bob himself, I don't think, even uses it that much these days, but not quite so much as the fellow who sat on Henry VIII's toilet.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, Dan, we've had some clarification about nitrogen narcosis.
Okay.
Or raptures of the deep, as it's called. This is from Muzz in the Watford Dental Studio. Ooh, congratulates me on my diving certificate. Thank you very much. And he says, he's done a bit of research. Nitrogen narcosis. What is it? It is an effect on the brain of gaseous nitrogen that occurs to divers who go below 100 feet. Okay?
You're only about 40.
Due to the laws of partial pressure. Mm-hmm. It's called Dalton's Law. And it's the gas that causes decompression sickness when you ascend, which is called Boyle's Law.
Oh, okay.
And they say the exact comparison that you can make for nitrogen narcosis is like having three martinis.
Oh.
And they said that basically every 50 feet of seawater that you go down, it's like drinking a martini.
Oh, how lovely.
So if
no
you go
wonder you've been having a wonderful time.
If you go down 150 feet, it's like having three martinis, so and you're all kind of wandering around
and
a bit like...
And you're under the sea there. You're bouncing around under the sea, and then at 100 feet, saying... Should we go down another 15 feet? I can't. I've got to go out tonight. Come on, another, just one more. Oh, don't make me go down another 10. Oh, come on. Oh, you are awful. Oh, it's delicious.
On 94.9 FM, this is BBC London.
Billy Reeves, BBC London 94.9. Next update, just before 5.
Fancy a cocktail, Billy?
I'd absolutely love one. Amy, when, where?
No, right now. Amy, you're doing the martini?
Yes,
here we go, everyone.
There's your Billy, and there's your Billy.
And one for me. Seeger Sessions and soon to be live in London, Bruce Springsteen and the various Hillbilly Band.
is he going to come and see us then?
I think it's in about 3 weeks. We've got them all. We can fit them all in, all the tubers and all of that. Just before we come to Natalie, by the way, Sean in East Dulwich sent us one a very a tremendous email about diving here. Listen to this. We're going deep diving now with Sean in East Dulwich. Hang on to this, everyone. This is something. To this. In 1993, I was in Cairns, Australia, as part of a year away.
That's a good place to go diving, I
think. Yeah, apparently it must be just amazing. I would have thought, hang on, no. So, I was in Cairns, Australia. I took my diving course there, and I was travelling alone. I often nabbed the last place on the dive boat for quite a decent price. On one such occasion, I found myself on a boat named the Rum Runner, headed some 200 miles east of the coast to a series of reefs and shoals. We woke in the morning of the moored on a dive site called the Abyss. It's a long trench that is a mile deep in places. We were here for a deep dive of 40 metres, down to the lip of the trench. Our dive master informed us we were going to experience some nitrogen narcosis, which befuddles you and makes your reasoning a little slow, to say the least. My dive partner this day was a huge Texan guy who, like all Texans, did keep up a running diatribe on how the reefs were bigger in the Gulf of Texas, the Gulf of Mexico to the rest of us, of course, how the water was clear in Texas, etc., etc., how he had dived the deepest of anyone there. Anyway, the time for talking was up, and in we went, down towards the abyss.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
It started in the calmest, shallowest water with a myriad of colours, corals and fish all around us. We went down to 15 metres and stayed at this depth, constantly checking our oxygen levels. Then we slowly descended down the steep incline that took us to the lip of the huge trench itself. There was a powerful current running along this channel, and we had to hang on to the rocks. Barely nothing grows in the water is so steep it fades to a deep blue, and then to an utter darkness, just black. We hung there, looking into it, taking it all in. Then there was a hand signal from my dive buddy. He showed me his air supply.
This is what they do when you run out of air, Dan. It's like a head chopping off motion.
He was drawing his hand across his throat. He had been sucking down air at a tremendous rate, and this was serious. His level was dangerous, and we still had a slow ascent ahead of us. I motioned to him to head up, and as he turned, his giant Texan leg kicked me and jogged me free of my safe handhold. The current dragged me off the ledge into the abyss. With all my strength and trying to stay calm while being quite off my head, I kicked, I wriggled, I spun, I crouched, I stretched, and eventually put a hand on my buddy. He grabbed me, and slowly we began to ascend. By the time we finished this ascent, our oxygen was done, our time on the safety bar over. After we recovered and recounted the story to the dive master, he looked terrified and did, as they say, blow us out of the water, which means banning us from diving for the rest of the stay. I calmed down enough to say to the man who had nearly killed me, "I guess you take big breaths in Texas, huh?"
Greatest fear, running out of air.
But staring into nothingness, knowing it goes down for a mile and then being kicked free of it and going, oh, falling in slow motion into it, while having had 12 martinis, as we now know. Yeah. Hiya, Kath.
How do I follow that?
Well, you got a show in 10 minutes' time. You only had an hour last night. You should be all recovered and stuff.
We're raring to go.
You're raring to go. What do you got?
We have got the head of NHS London's going to be in taking calls.
Oh, yeah?
At hospital care in London.
Oh, really?
Health, GPs, everything. She's the woman who knows. She'll take questions from six.
My sister-in-law shut her finger in a door. She was locking up the pub she looks after. Shattered her finger. Completely shattered it. Split it open like a sausage. 2 o'clock in the morning. The cab took her to the hospital over at Whitechapel. About 2:30 in the morning the other week. She was actually attended 6 a.m. on Sunday evening.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I attended there. Yeah. Wasn't allowed home because they didn't know she needed operations up. Nobody came to see her.
Well, it's stories
she
like
had towels
that.
And towels wrapped around
right.
it.
This is story. Well, stories like this that you're going to be able to put straight to the woman in charge.
And she'll say, "Well, obviously we won't be with all respect to her, she's not going to be able to say that's never going to happen again. That doesn't happen. It does. It does. Get Hattie Jakes. That's the word. Get Hattie Jakes. Isn't it? That's all you want. You want to go in a hospital and you want to see Hattie Jakes.
So yes, you
get,
you do.
So give us again. You are talking to?
Ruth Carnell, who's the chief executive of NHS London.
I'm unpiling the course. Nice one there. I'm sorry to lay that story just before you were going to do
that's
bit.
Great.
It was, yeah, I know, but it was a bit unfair. Here's Natalie, diving instructor. Natalie, thank you for hanging on there, Natalie.
You're welcome. Hello, Danny.
Thank you, Natalie.
Sorry I couldn't get you on the island, Natalie.
Oh, no. Well, you know.
Hi, Amy. Congratulations on becoming a diver.
Look
thank
at
you.
That. She's joined your club. What's the story there, Nat? What do you want?
Indeed, yes.
What do you want to tell us, Nat? What's the story?
Yes, nitrogen narcosis. It sort of involves an octopus as well.
Oh, go on.
I was diving last summer with a couple of friends, and this was in Malta, in Gozo, which is in Malta.
Yeah.
And we were very deep, a bit deeper than on the other story.
Like deeper?
Deeper than we should have been, let's say.
Okay.
Anyway, we'd got down to the bottom, and I'd swum slightly ahead of the others, and then I looked back to see if they were sort of on their way. And they were waving me back over.
Right.
So I swam back to them, and the nitrogen narcosis was starting to set in a bit by then.
It does feel like drunk, does it? It does feel like drunk?
It does feel like drunk. You just get very confused and you get disorientated.
Mm-hmm.
And your air goes very quickly if you're deep as well, which makes it worse. So, anyway, they were pointing at a hole, and as I swam over, I saw something move in it. And I looked at the one of them to say, what was it? Because the other thing is, you can't talk underwater, so you have to use signals.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave her a signal by sort of shrugging and pointing at the hole, and she held 8 fingers, waggled them, and hand out her hands to say it was something big, and she seemed to flap her arms.
Yes.
And I thought, what, 8 eagle rays have just come up a chimney?
Yeah.
And I knew for sure I was not. So at that point, I thought, I've got to start going up.
Yeah.
So we started to ascend, and at that depth, you can ascend fairly quickly, and the other thing about narcosis is it wears off.
Oh, well, pretty quickly.
After a certain depth. It's not like being drunk.
Oh man, I wish it was like being drunk. You could just snap out of it. We'd all be in the hay, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. Anyway, so we got back up to sort of 20 meters, and then did the rest of the dive. Finished the dive, and all for the whole dive, all I could think was I've missed 8 eagle rays going up a chimney. And I'm just wondering what it was that she'd seen, trying to work it out. So finally, when we got to the surface, I asked her, and she said, "Oh, it was a giant octopus."
Giant one.
Because the signal she'd use was 8 fingers
to
represent the legs.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I got it. I mean, I don't know what your image was, but immediately somebody waggles 8 fingers at me, I think, giant octopus.
Of course. Well, it was obvious when she explained it, but not at the time.
Wow. And
the effect of narcosis.
Is it the giant octopus that's never been filmed, has it? It's never, ever been filmed.
Has it?
Never.
According to them, yes.
Yeah, well, I saw on the old National Geographic, I watched an entire hour and a half, and it said it's never been filmed, and here we are for the first time to get it on film, and at the end of it, they hadn't filmed it, which was a bit of a swizz, but you could have been down there with your box brownie, waiting for, what did you think they were? What did you think they were, Nat? You thought the signal meant what?
8 eagle rays.
Yeah, you're waiting for 8 eagle rays. Meanwhile, behind you, 8 little tentacles are putting their fingers on the end of the octopus's beak and waggling it.
Thumb on the nose and all that.
Well, Nat, I'm sorry you're not coming along, but the rules is the rules. What's the matter there,
She could have taken the octopus and just put it on her head and tied it underneath, with a big bow.
You see, that's why I've got to go diving with you, because that's the sort of thing we'll do, isn't it? And emerge from the waters like Esther Williams with 2 dolphins under your feet and saying, not worrying about the wicked world one bit.
Exactly.
Amy LeMay is plainly back with us in Fit in Wind and Shank. Thank you, everyone, for a terrific week. We'll be back Monday.
Billy Piper's in with us.
My dear friend Billy Piper. I've got her marriage certificate, so she may want it. I'll give it to her on Monday. I really have. Thanks, Amy. Thanks to Charlotte and the 18, 19-year-olds. We'll be back in a couple of days. We'll see you then. Okay. Oh, not that. Oh, no. Oh, no. Henry VIII, his ghost, you know that, don't you?